Talkback with Lance and Daniel from 6 p.m.
It's Daniel Martin with you on this edition of Talkback, and here is the story that sparked today's topic. A 20-year-old woman has been placed on probation for making a false rape report in Singapore. Clarisse Ling Min Rui lied to the police after a man she met on Sugarbook refused to pay her $1,200. She's going to serve 12 months supervised probation and complete 60 hours of community service. As this came out in the case, Ling had consensual sex with the 43-year-old man before making the false claim, and she later admitted she lied because he wouldn't pay the amount that she demanded. Ling pleaded guilty in September to two charges of giving false information to a public servant and causing alarm by threatening to report the victim to the police for rape. What do you do if a false accusation is made against you? For example, something as serious as rape. We need to talk and understand the legal implications and ramifications. And as you know, I'm flying solo on today's edition. Lance is not here. So I need you to be my co-hosts. I want you to send in voice notes via WhatsApp. I want you to call in and ask questions of our lawyer guest. I want you to WhatsApp your questions across. You're my co-host on Talkback.
Have your say. It's Talkback with Lance and Daniel. Call in 669 11938 or WhatsApp 963 11938.
Once again, our question on today's edition: what do you do if a false accusation is made against you? Example, something like rape or sexual assault. That is our question. Noelle Teo is joining me, associate lawyer at GJC Law. Noelle, welcome back. Hi.
Hi, Daniel.
Good to have you on board. First and foremost, I don't want this to colour or shape anyone's opinion. It is still vital for us to remember that the law recognises how important it is to believe the accuser, especially in something as serious as sexual assault or rape as well. In fact, does the law make sure that it gives weight to the accuser, to the person that brings the files, the police report? I mean, the weight has to lie on that person's story, doesn't it?
I believe in every case where it's reported, the police will assess whether or not there is actually an offence that's been committed, and mm-hmm. then they will then investigate accordingly. Mm-hmm. As with this case, they definitely went down and investigated and then took her statement to find out from her what actually happened. So I think I agree with you. We should not take it away from the whoever who reports the crime. Otherwise, it may, of course, prevent people from reporting when they actually do experience certain circumstances.
Correct. We don't want people to feel like they won't be believed if they make the police report in a case of a genuine sexual assault or a rape scenario. But at the same time, when people weaponize or take advantage of the law and use it as a threat, as this individual had done to the man, then it really has a trickle-down effect. It affects other women who might seriously, desperately need to utilize this and bring it to justice, right? We don't want to color or change that. Unfortunately, like cases like this, is this few and far between, or have you all had experience with people weaponizing the law when it comes to sexual assault or rape?
Okay, so maybe start with the first point. Yes, I think we should not let it color other possible victims of sexual assault. That's the first thing, and which is the reason why this is such a serious offense, and which is why, you know, the police will definitely investigate, and when it comes that it is a false report, then they will do the necessary prosecution, of course, in deciding whether or not a custodial sentence is to be imposed. Of course, it depends on, you know, the relevance of the information, the duration of the falsehood, and also what any other factors that came into play when they made the false report. That's the first point, right? And I think the second point is when you talk about...
Have you all seen this before?
Yes, we have seen this before. We have... Maybe not even just rape. There are, of course, any other allegations of other offences.
Yes.
There could be of allegations between, you know, certain family members, certain couples, when, you know, the relationship breaks down.
Or against business owners and defamations.
Yes, it could be also between Yeah, there could be a lot of these cases. We do have a previous case where it was between a boyfriend and girlfriend, and then there was a false allegation of rape. And eventually, of course, the person who made the false allegation was in prison for it. There are also other cases that I did a quick search online. There are, of course, numerous other cases of rape allegations that led to an imprisonment or probation, depending on the age of the offender and, of course, the circumstances of the offence.
Really? So imprisonment can be one aspect of judgment in the case of a false accusation? Because
yes,
in this case,
possible.
It was 12 months supervised probation and 60 hours of community service.
Yes, of course, based on the provision under the law, there is a provision for imprisonment term to be imposed. In this case, of course, we don't have the full circumstances of the offence, but if we were to, of course, look at it, she is 20 years old. She is under 21 years old. Likely, they are looking at, you know, rehabilitation because they did prepare a probation report to determine whether she's suitable for probation or not. So that is probably where they came from. Of course, we don't have the full extent of the report.
Okay. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments in terms of our topic today, what do you do if false accusations are made against you? For example, rape or sexual assault. You can WhatsApp across, send voice notes, and you can also call in. You're my co-host on today's edition as I speak to Noelle Teo, associate lawyer at a GJC Law. Actually, Noelle, before we go on into the idea of false accusations, since I got a lawyer present, can I ask a question about the nature of the case? Why there was money exchange, which I think to a lot of people reading is like, huh? What's going on? Isn't that prostitution? But the idea of the exchange of monies for sexual services is the definition of or making financial gain from the act of sexual relations is a prostitution thing. But this is not a prostitution thing because it was a consensual thing, but she demanded money as well. Like, is there an additional charge for that or anything like that? Or is that perfectly allowed in today's day and age?
Okay, so essentially, I believe if you recall a couple of years back, there was a case of paying a minor for sexual offences. Of course, that is where it crosses the line, right? I think this lady met on Sugar Book, so of course there is a sugar baby, sugar daddy kind of relationship between them, allegedly. Usually there's some sort of exchange of some benefits. I'm not sure what, but...
For example, we've covered this on the show. In fact, we've spoken to an ex-sugar baby on our show where the idea is that the monies is not in exchange for sexual services, but companionship or maybe in terms of an allowance to support you for the month and that kind of thing.
So it's not really like paying for the sexual.
But it clouds the issue, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. But it really depends on the circumstances of how it's being demanded. So if you're telling me after the sexual intercourse and then you say, okay, now you pay me $200 for this, then of course that sounds a bit more like an exchange of services. But if, let's say, you know, somebody's paying every month as an allowance, like you mentioned, then that's a very different thing. Of course, between consensual adults, sexual intercourse is always possible, and it's actually consensual, right? So when it comes to assault, that is where we go towards the he say, she say situation. Because sexual assault is very private, right? Sexual intercourse is very private. We wouldn't know what is happening between the two parties, what is being alleged, and of course that it boils back down to the police to do the necessary investigations on whether there is some form of other offences that's being infringed. Of course, prostitution, there is legal prostitution and illegal prostitution. So all of this really depends on the circumstances of each case and of course how the police actually investigates. Sometimes there may be, you know, certain messages that's exchanged, but most of the time, I doubt that it will be even recorded, you know, especially if you're just in the room together and just saying that, okay, you pay me this amount, we'll do this. It's very hard to actually pin back down. So it goes back down to basically who's narrative is the most accurate and can be supported by evidence.
Yes, so that's the thing that I really want to delve into right now as well, which is the idea of what to do if the accusation is made against you, because maybe you don't have any kind of evidence, whether it's textual, what if it's all verbal, what if it's a he says, she says situation. What do you do if a false accusation is made to you? What are the first steps? Do you try and accumulate evidence, screenshots or whatever? Do you go to the police and file a counter claim as well? What do you do?
Okay, first of all, stay calm. Don't go and, you know, confront the accuser. We don't want it to be seen as, you know, intimidation or retaliation. If you feel tempted to post online about it on social media, don't do it because it will overcomplicate matters and may also cause problems with your defense.
Right.
We're not sure whether or not this will affect, because all of this publicly commented, posts can be used as evidence against you,
okay.
Right? Regarding evidence, of course, we would always suggest they come, think back of what sort of evidence could be collected to support your case.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can always speak to a lawyer who can help you sort through any potential evidence, go through the matter with you. Sometimes we do go through from the start of the night to the end of the night what happened with the client to make them tell us exactly what happened, ask questions, think through what sort of evidence. So it could be even things like CCTV footage. Like in this case, they went through the CCTV footage.
Mm-hmm.
If of course you were not even there, then it could be things like alibis. You could go through messages, emails, whether there were other witnesses who saw you. Receipts. So maybe you all had dinner, so it could be receipts, which actually provides time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes PayNow transfers, all these things, or even your Google location history. All of this is possible evidence that you can collect to maybe sometimes show where you are, what time. Sometimes it shows what time you left the place, what time you were at the place. Things like this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first thing you should do. All that, talk to a lawyer, try to gather all this evidence. Most of the time, sometimes, the police may just come to arrest you, right?
Okay.
So you may not have time to talk to a lawyer beforehand.
So if an accuser has made a claim of rape against you, you could be arrested immediately?
I mean, sometimes they may tell you that I'm going to file a complaint against you. But then, of course, then you will have a bit of time. But
okay.
Sometimes the police may contact you to tell you to come down for an interview. But we never know, because sometimes there may be situations where the police approach you and, arrest you to take your statement.
I see.
Maybe not arrest, maybe just to approach you to ask you to come down and take your statement. There may not be sufficient time to speak to a lawyer. Of course, if you are truly innocent, you can always speak to the police and give them your side of the story. Of course, be very consistent. Don't embellish, don't start creating scenarios, don't start speculating about what the person's intention is. Of course, definitely do not destroy evidence, because this could be separate offences. It could be, giving false evidence to the police by yourself, and or even an obstruction of justice charge if you are, starting to destroy evidence that you think that is bad for you.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So the idea of filing a police report of your own, should you be doing that as well? Or do you have
no
grounds for
that? No, you can do that if you truly believe that, it is a false accusation. You can always do that. But just make sure that you know that it is true. It's because you don't want the double whammy against you, right?
Yeah. So in this case, for example, the individual had requested a certain amount of money. The mail party offered X amount, and then Y amount was not accepted. One of my listeners is WhatsApping across and saying, should the case be investigated as a case of extortion? So in that case, before it had reached the point of a rape accusation, if the male individual had filed a police report of extortion, is that possible?
Okay, so we do have past cases where it is, you do this or I will file police reports against
yes,
you.
Yes.
You sign this or you pay me this. It falls, I think, sometimes crosses the line between extortion and, of course, criminal intimidation.
Mm.
So it really depends on what's the threat made, depends on what is being demanded. And the police will do their necessary investigations and talk to the prosecution, who will then decide on the charge. So there are cases like that, like you do this or I will file a police report against you for this.
Got it. Okay. So if you, like you said, if you've been asked to go down to a police station and to make and to be asked questions as part of this case, maybe you don't have time to consult with a lawyer as well. What happens in that situation?
So like we said, if you are truly innocent, you can always speak to the police and then give your side of the story. But you can always ask to see a lawyer. Just to be very clear, in Singapore, there's no such thing as I asked for a lawyer to be present, but I was not allowed
to
do
believe
that.
What you see on TV and
yes,
all that kind of
yes,
stuff.
Yes,
ah,
don't,
okay.
Don't believe that. I have
one
done
phone
it.
Call?
Yes. I have heard it so many times. I don't want to speak until my lawyer appears.
We don't
no
have
such
that.
Thing.
So
we don't have that. Of course, you can always ask to speak to a lawyer, but of course, the discretion is with the police whether or not they should allow you to speak to a lawyer, because it may affect investigations.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, as lawyers, we cannot help you prepare on what to say and what not to say, but definitely we will always remind that you cannot be giving a false account, you cannot be destroying evidence, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the same thing that I mentioned to you, that is if someone comes to speak to us, we will tell them that, you know, you should not be giving false accounts because there will be a separate charge. This will be also be reminded by the police. Sometimes they may inform you that, you know, as at a certain point in the statement recording, they will also inform that as well. Then, of course, once you come out from the police station, then you can then approach a lawyer and then inform the lawyer what has happened. And then from there onwards to try to see how we can deal with the matter. So, for example, if you have certain evidence that hasn't been provided to the police, see whether the lawyer can communicate with the police for you mm-hmm. and then to mm-hmm. provide all of this information.
Here's an interesting question from one of our listeners. This person asks, will there be a case where if there's insufficient evidence to prove innocence and so the accuser wins, what if it's very well staged in that sense, or there's just a lack of evidence to defend the accused? Let's talk about that.
I think maybe we go back to the basic point where there is, of course, the presumption of innocence and the burden of proof is on the prosecution to prove the guilt.
Oh, that one we learned from TV is correct, huh?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. There is a presumption of innocence until proven guilty, right? And then, but of course, the burden is on the prosecution to prove the guilt.
But the problem is in this case, evidence is so hard to come by. He says, she says, is so difficult to prove. What if there's no physical evidence? But then let's bear in mind all the other things that you say that can contribute, that can be done, whether it is receipts from credit cards, or whether it's taxi, whether it's your Google positioning. I mean, there is a lot of groundwork to try and gather the right evidence first and foremost.
Yes, so I will go back to that same point, right? So we do trust in the legal system. We trust in the courts to be able to put forth a case and to be able to determine the guilt of someone, whether someone's innocent or whether someone's guilty. There are, of course, previous cases where people have gone to trial and then were acquitted after that based on the evidence that has been presented. Mm-hmm. Of course, the standard for such cases where he say, she say is unusually convincing. So someone needs to be, the evidence needs to be exceptionally convincing for someone to be able to accept that, you know, there is something that happens. And then of course they look at both parties, and when the matter goes to trial, both parties will be put on the stand, right? Mm-hmm. And then that is where the cross-examination takes place, and that is what you see on TV, right? Cross-examination takes place.
And that is also what we read about on the articles and the judgments. And I think that is the cause for concern for a lot of the layperson, the average, or for us, the non-legally trained person who's not in the court. When we read those cases and judgments and the articles and the outcomes, sometimes it sounds like it's a personal opinion. You might hear the judge say, oh, the accused hasn't demonstrated their consistency and doesn't show himself to be a credible or reliable person or something along those lines.
Yes.
And then when we read stuff like, we're like, huh, is this like a personal opinion? The judge don't like me, that I lose.
No. I don't think it's that case. In Singapore, we do trust in the legal system. We do trust in our judges to be able to make the correct decision, because they are, of course, the experts in doing all this, in analyzing all of the evidence presented before them, including, of course, all the statements, all of the collected evidence, video evidence, even evidence that is being taken. So, for example, statements that are being taken in sexual offences are recorded. So it's not like just a written one, it's also recorded. So the recorded statement, of course, you can always look at the consistency, right? What do you mean by consistency? From the time that you are being investigated to the time that you are at trial, to the time that in between, what are the statements that you are giving? What is the information that you are presenting? Which is why previously, remember, I said, don't embellish, don't start creating things, don't start putting your opinion in. Because sometimes you may, you know, say something that I think that this happened. Then what do you mean by you think that this happened?
Right.
You have to be, of course, sure that this happened and be consistent in what you are presenting. And if you do believe in your innocence, your defense and whatever you think that proves your innocence should be presented from the early on. It should not be only at the time of trial then you start thinking, oh, actually, I have this thing to bring up. No, it should be clearly presented from the, which is why once you have the opportunity to speak to a lawyer, usually the lawyer will assist in analyzing the case and giving you the advice on how to proceed, what sort of evidence we need to present. Sometimes we may communicate directly with the prosecution on certain information.
Another question that came across at 963-11938, one of our listeners asking, if the accused is found, I think this person is meant to say, if the accused is found innocent, can he countersue if, for example, compensation? So the innocent individual has been through quite a bit of, time trauma.
Of course, through the ringer.
Yeah. Can they counter sue for compensation?
So that will be a civil claim. So you will have to claim this in the civil courts. It will not be in the criminal courts. It will be in the civil courts regarding whatever, damages that you have suffered. It could be reputational. It could be, psychological. It could even be certain expenses or things that you have gone through throughout this period of time. Because investigation is not like one day, 2 day. It takes time, right? Because there's so much evidence to be presented.
Yeah.
And like you said, we want to be very sure that this is what happened. So, of course, we have to be very patient during the time of investigations. And during this time, of course, the anxiety comes in, right? Maybe some people feel that, my reputation has been damaged.
Mm.
This is something that you have to raise in the civil courts.
And can a civil claim take a very long time? Is it a very long, drawn-out process?
It depends on the court. It depends on your claim. Of course, you will always have to file it in court. And in Singapore, it is quite an efficient system.
Okay. Noel, my issue that I want to discuss, this is the unique circumstance of this consensual situation that occurred via an online app. So that was the thing that was very intriguing for a lot of people. And that's why this story has become quite viral as well. So the issue of Clarice Ling Ming-Rui, who is serving 12 months supervised probation and completing 60 hours of community service. She and the 43-year-old male had met via the app Sugarbook. And there was a false claim made of rape against the 43-year-old man. So in this day and age, there are quite a few people meeting through online apps. And this could become, or may already be, a rampant thing of people meeting up via these apps. And the worry, I think, for a lot of people is maybe they don't want things that they've said on the app to be admitted as part of their defense or things like that. Because they don't want to self-implicate or they don't want to come off badly or anything along those lines. And then they end up paying money in a case of extortion or in a case of a demand like this. Is the law keeping up with the fact that a lot of these relationships and meetups might be happening through social media apps or apps like Sugarbook or Tinder, where people are meeting in this way, sometimes for relationships, sometimes for sexual intercourse?
I think, so these sort of arrangement, of course, clearly between consenting adults, are not specifically governed by the law. I mean, it will be very hard to govern this. So because there are people who, of course, meet people for dating online and get married.
But
so how are you going to govern all of this?
Whether the law is keeping up with the gray area when monies are exchanged or not?
I think at this point in time, there isn't really a specific law that governs it. And it really depends on what happens when it crosses the line to become illegal. Mm-hmm. So for example, when minor is involved, where there's fraud or where there's extortion, that is when it crosses the line, right? Generally, if it's consenting adults, there's essentially nothing much that the law controls over. Otherwise, the law will be controlling everything in your life, right? And become a totally different situation where people wouldn't want that. But when it crosses the line, of course, commercial sex with anybody under 18 is, of course, a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Grooming, exploitation charges, things like that, all of this is possible. So sexual exploitation charges for grooming or even sexual acts with someone below 16, below 14.
Oh, clear cut.
All of these things is clear cut, right?
Yes.
And then the in-between gray areas really depends on what happens when it's reported because every case is different.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it could be just a consensual act or it could be during the consensual act, something happens and it stops. Consent has to be continuing, right? It cannot be that if the person says, maybe the person goes into the room with you, but in the end, the person says, no, I don't want to continue with this. Then consent stops.
So even though consent was given at the beginning of the evening, if it changes, that's when consent stops.
Yes, of course, it has to be continuing consent and it works both ways. It's not just, male, female.
Consent, I understand, but it's the monies thing that becomes the worrying thing. My worry is that people are getting around the idea of prostitution by clouding it under the concept of allowance or token sum and things like that.
Yes, I think, yes, if you do explicitly provide payment for sexual service, then it may amount to prostitution. And of course, if you publicly solicit it and it's also prohibited and if maybe a third party arranges it, that could even be an offense as well, because it's living off the profits of a prostitute, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course, if the platform is actually facilitating prostitution
and earning from you in terms yes. of subscription rates, isn't that technically
yeah,
pimping?
They may also become liable. Really depends on how each case is being reported. But if we are just thinking aloud, then I think the line crosses when it is, of course, I'm saying that, okay, if you do this with me, I will pay you this. And then there's this real exchange of all of this happening. Then it really may cross the line. And at a point in time, who reports, right? So if it's a consenting arrangement, then most of the time, of course, it goes under the radar. Nobody reports it
mm-hmm.
until something goes wrong and then somebody decides to raise it up, right? Most
yes.
of the time, that's how it happens.
Yes.
I think at this point in time, I wouldn't say that the law has a specific law that deals with all of this. It is really based on what happens, and then the law steps in to deal with each of the circumstances.
Understood. Noelle, this has been fascinating to hear from you the advice. Clearly, the thing that stands out the most is if it is a false accusation, your best defense is the truth, which is being clear-cut about the facts, about the circumstances, the situation, being consistent with your evidence and making sure that you are the credible and reliable individual who is leaning on the factual truth of the scenario. So if you're falsely accused, the law is technically on your side in a way because you are providing facts as they occurred.
Yes, I think you summed it up pretty well. And to really bring it back to the first point that we brought up, none of this is to stop any victims from reporting.
Yes.
So if it's really real, something really happened, please do not think that, you know, somebody may not believe you. Somebody may not think about what you're talking about. You know, do go and report if, let's say, you do think that something has really
yes.
happened. But make sure that it is the truth and on both ends, whether you're the accuser or whether you're the person being accused.
Noelle Teal is Associate Lawyer at GJC Law. Thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners, thank you for your questions that have come through on TalkBack.